Chapter 14, A Brief Reunion.
Now hear this. All hands prepare for departure. Repeat, all hands prepare for departure. Secure all docking collars.
I'm back in the supply group picking up my new issue gear when the departure alert comes over the 1MC. With all the activity everywhere on the ship, it seems impossible that the Midway is already stocked and crewed for combat operations. But it looks like we're off to war anyway.
Already?
Sergeant Symer says, echoing my own thoughts.
Jeez, it's like they're pushing us out the door with our shoes untied.
And in our underwear, I add, the way this bucket is already in fighting shape.
You got quarters yet, Grayson?
Yeah, I grabbed a berth in NCO country. Weird, they're stacking the grunts three high on the flight deck, and half the permanent berths on my deck are empty. I got a two-man berth all to myself. It's like we're running on a skeleton crew.
We are,
Symer says.
60% in normal at best.
But we have three times as many grunts as a supercarrier, and most of them are garrison troops who've never been in space before.
We gotta feed all those mudlegs for a month. We'll get to wherever we're headed with empty food stores,
Symer says.
Hope it's a fast trip to the chute.
By now, everyone but the most oblivious private, straight out of tech school, has figured out that our upcoming deployment is going to be anything but a bread-and-butter task force cruise or planetary assault. They never inform the rank and file of the mission specifics until we are out of the Alcubierre chute in the destination system, so all we can do is speculate. Since we have three times our normal contingent of infantry and not enough dropships to land them all at once, the general consensus in the NCO mess is a garrison deployment, reinforcing some SI detachment on a backwater colony planet close to the 30. The presence of homeworld defense troops and the aged equipment of our hastily assembled battle group spawn other rumors, magnitudes wilder than the usual pre-deployment scuttlebutt. We're evacuating Earth. We're assaulting the lanky homeworld with everything that can ride an Alcubierre chute. We secretly made peace with the SRA, and we're going to help them fight off the lankies on Novia Kiev. We secretly surrendered to the SRA, and we're delivering half the fleet's tonnage for disarmament. Enlisted soldiers have active imaginations, unlike the brass at Joint Command or the bureaucrats holding the reins back on Earth. Whatever the rumors, however, the conclusions are similar in every mess hall and crew berth on the ship. This deployment will be a hasty clusterfuck of epic proportions, and at the end of the day, grunts and pilots and wrench spinners will be left holding the bag. I finally run into my old squad leader in the most fitting of all places on the Midway, the shooting range over in SI country. Since I lost all my kit with the Manitoba, the armorer on the Midway had to scrounge up a pair of armament sets for me. Ever since they gave us new gear for use against the lankies, every spaceborne grunt has two sets of weapons, called Alpha and Bravo kit. The Alpha kit consists of a modular flechette rifle with a grenade launcher for use against other humans. The Bravo kit is centered on the M80, a giant jackhammer of a rifle that fires a 25mm round with the destructive power of a light vehicle cannon. The Alpha and Bravo kits I get from the armor are from the tail end of the supply chain, just like everything else on this ship. The M66 looks like it has been cleaned to death by 50 cycles of recruits, and the M80 is so loose and rattly that I suspect it was used for stress testing experimental loads at Aberdeen Proving Grounds. Still, I want to be sure that my new rifles actually hit roughly where I point them, so I haul the entire kit down to the range on a slow morning. When I check in with the range master, I can see through the armored windows that all 8 of the computerized shooting stations are taken up by HD troopers, and more grunts are lined up and waiting behind each station. The troopers in the firing lanes are putting their flechette rifles through their paces, shooting bursts at computer-generated targets. All the HD troopers on the range carry their standard M66s, which are almost useless against 1,000-ton lankies that can cover 40 clicks in an hour at a leisurely gait. It's strange to see the homeworld defense troops in their unfamiliar battle armor on fleet turf. The HD armor suits are subtly different from those worn by our spaceborne infantry grunts. Their shoulder pauldrons are bigger, the chest and back plates more faceted, and the sensor bulbs on the helmets are in slightly different spots. I notice that most of the grunts on the firing line have battle scars on their armor plating, shrapnel gouges and pockmarks from bullet impacts. Whatever the HD battalions riding along with us have done Earthside lately, it looks like they were no less busy than our frontline assault regiments. The HD troops use helmet-mounted sights, just like we do, so all the troopers on the firing line are in full battle rattle. They wear name tags across the backs of their helmets, but I don't need to read the one labeled Fallon to recognize my old squad sergeant. She's in the last lane on the far right of the line, standing half a head shorter than the next smallest of her troopers. The rifle in her hands burps out a steady stream of short bursts. There's something about her bearing and economy of movement that would make her stand out in a parade ground among a whole regiment of troopers. I watch as she works through her magazine, putting simulated tungsten flechettes into imaginary holographic enemies until the bolt of her rifle locks back on an empty feedway. She raises the muzzle, yanks the disposable magazine block out of the rifle, and checks the chamber before vacating her spot in the booth for the next trooper in line. Then she walks up the firing line to the exit hatch, where I am standing, and I give her a curt wave when she raises the visor of her battle helmet. Her purposeful stride falters just for the fraction of a second, and I see a hint of surprise on the part of her face I can see through the visor slot of her helmet. Then she walks over to where I'm standing and motions for me to follow her out through the armored hatch of the firing range, away from the hoarse staccato of the flechette rifles. Outside, in the range master's vestibule, she removes her helmet and turns around to face me.
"Andrew Grayson,"
she says, and pulls me into a firm, one-armed hug. Nearby, two of the HD troopers about to walk onto the range exchange looks of surprised amusement at the sight of their senior sergeant hugging some fleet puke.
"What the fuck are you doing on this rusty piece of shit?"
"Good to see you again, Sarge," I say. "This rusty piece of shit is my new duty station as of last week."
"You must have pissed off the brass something fierce again."
"No, my shiny new ship got shot to shit by the Lankies a few weeks ago."
"What the hell are you doing here? I thought you didn't do space." "Yeah, well, so did I. Division says we're on loan, so we pack our shit and go. Trust me, I'm not ecstatic about it."
I haven't seen Sergeant Fallon in person since my last day with the Territorial Army, half a lifetime ago. She hasn't changed much at all. Her hair is neatly gathered into the same tight ponytail I remember, and her features are still hard and sharp. From her service history, I know Brianna Fallon is about 10 years older than I am, but I never asked her exact age, and she never volunteered it. I could no more guess her year of birth than estimate the manufacturing date of a well-serviced dropship. A weapon maintained at peak efficiency is all but ageless. The only obvious difference between this Sergeant Fallon and the one who led my squad into Detroit 5 years ago is the rank device on the chest of her battle armor. She has gained 2 ranks since then, and now wears the triple chevrons of a master sergeant. She taps the single chevron of my staff sergeant rank sigil with the finger of her armored glove.
"Climb the ladder a bit, huh?"
"Yeah, you know the fleet. They give those things to everyone."
"You did good,"
she says, and nods at the combat controller flash on my helmet.
"I'm glad you didn't stick with that console jockey job Unworth shoved you into."
"They never have enough nutcases for the suicide track. Whatever happened to Major Unworth?" Sergeant Fallon shakes her head with a disgusted snort.
"Major Unworth is now Lieutenant Colonel Unworth. He's the new XO of the 365th. Place ain't what it used to be, I tell you that."
"How come you switched units, Sarge?"
"Had no choice, Grayson."
She lowers her voice a little.
"The 330th is a penal battalion of sorts. It took a mauling in the New Madrid riots last year, so they dissolved it and rebuilt it with all the misfits and malcontents the brigade wanted to dump. Keeps us all in one place, you see."
She looks around to check if anyone is close enough to listen in, but the range master is on the other side of the range door, and we're alone in the vestibule.
"I have to get back to my troops, Grayson, but keep your schedule clear. Meet me after evening chow at 1900. We have a bit of a club set up in one of the maintenance sheds. Foxtrot deck, F2029. We have stuff to talk about."
I spend the rest of the day sighting in my rifles and running my new battle armor through all its self-test protocols. My specialized combat controller kit is 2 generations behind the stuff that burned up in my locker on the Manitoba. But all the comms and network modules work as they should, and my armor doesn't have any dents or leaks. Without a bug suit, my combat endurance on a lanky world is measured in hours instead of days. But since none of the other grunts have been issued a HEBA kit, I consider it a fairly safe bet that we're not going head-on against an established lanky colony. Like a good soldier, I head down to Foxtrot Deck 15 minutes early. Unit F2029 is a maintenance and storage cube in a corner of the Grease Monkey Zone by the hangar, partitioned from the rest of the deck with plastalloy mesh wiring. Two HD troopers stand by the open entrance, but they don't do anything to keep me from entering. In the storage cube, someone has piled up stacks of modular equipment crates all along the mesh walls, forming a sight barrier 8 feet high. Inside the makeshift privacy walls, more equipment crates have been requisitioned as furniture, serving as benches and tables. There are a dozen HD troopers lounging in the storage unit, and all of them turn their heads my way when I walk in.
"Get lost somewhere, Sergeant?"
A first lieutenant asks me, with only the barest hint of cordiality in his voice. "Looking for Master Sergeant Fallon," I say. The stares from the HD troopers aren't exactly hostile, but they're not welcoming either. I'm suddenly keenly aware of the fact that I came down here unarmed, and that every one of the HD grunts in the room is wearing at least a combat knife.
"He's okay."
Sergeant Fallon's voice comes from behind me. She steps past me into the room, still in battle armor.
"Grayson was one of my guys in the 365th. He's been in the shit with me."
The suppressed hostility dissipates from the room. I notice that even the first lieutenant instantly defers to Sergeant Fallon. She walks over to one of the makeshift benches and drops down on it with a grunt.
"Come and have a seat, Grayson,"
she says.
"The guys don't bite. We're all friends down here."
I do as directed and sit down across the makeshift table from Sergeant Fallon, who is opening the latches of her chest and back plates with practiced hands. She pulls off the hard shells of the outer armor and lets them drop to the deck.
"Long fucking day,"
she says to me, and puts her feet up on the crate that serves as a table.
"I don't know how you fleet pukes can stand it, spending months in these coffins. I've only been walking around in here for a day and a half, and I'm already getting claustrophobic."
"It helps to remind yourself just how much room there is on the other side of that hull," I say. "Think of it as cozy. Just be glad you're on a carrier. Lots of leg room. Frigate's about a 20th of the tonnage."
"This is what you've been doing the last 5 years? Sitting around in one of these tin cans?"
"Well, that and taking it to the lankies. Tell you what, those SRA Marines aren't half bad when your other option is fighting something that's 80 feet tall and bulletproof."
"Did they tell you where we're going?"
I shake my head. Not a clue. They dragged this old thing out of mothballs and rushed us out the door, and that's all I know. That was the fastest pre-deployment prep I've ever seen.
"You know how they got us ground pounders ready for this shit?"
Sergeant Fallon asks.
6 days at Camp Jarhead with a bunch of SI instructors. 6 days! And half those space monkeys didn't know their ass from a hole in the ground. If those guys are supposed to be our first line of defense up here, we must be good and fucked."
6 days? I repeat in disbelief. SI combat school for infantry soldiers takes 3 months, half of which are spent in zero-G and hostile environment training at Camp Gray on Luna. 6 days are barely enough to get people used to moving in low gravity without killing themselves.
"Yeah,"
Sergeant Fallon says.
"And no new gear either. They showed us how to fire those M-80s, and the crew served autocannons, but they didn't issue us any. What the fuck are we gonna do with our pop guns up here?"
I don't have a good answer for her, so I just shake my head in commiseration. With 2 battalions of Earthside grunts lacking anti-lanky weaponry, our still-secret destination has got to be an SRA colony planet. Otherwise, those 1,500 homeworld defense troopers are just very inefficient ballast. "A squad can take a lanky with those pop guns," I say. "You just have to get the drop on it and blow your whole ammo load. And even then, it's a shaky thing. Also, they run in groups just like we do." "Awesome," one of the other troopers says, and the others start an unhappy little chorus of murmurs.
"Doesn't matter,"
Sergeant Fallon says.
"If we get to go up against those things, we're all fucked anyway. Cruising around in this museum exhibit. But I doubt that's why we're up here."
She looks at me for a moment, biting on her lower lip slightly, as if she's appraising me.
You keeping up with the news from Earthside, Grayson?
Not really, I say. Don't have much time to watch the networks. Whatever we get is canned shit anyway. Milnet's just boring shit, unit news, and feel-good crap.
They're keeping the lid on tight,
Sergeant Fallon says.
Color me shocked.
You're suggesting that Fleet Command sanitizes our news?
I ask with mock incredulity. Several of the troopers chuckle, but Sergeant Fallon does not even smile at my joke. Instead, she looks around again and then leans across the table, propping her elbows on the scuffed olive-green polyplast of the crate.
You remember Detroit, right? The night we lost 2 dropships and a bunch of troops?
I lightly touch the side of my tunic, placing 2 fingers onto the spot where some welfare rioter with a stolen rifle put 2 flechette rounds into me, piercing 1 lung and a few yards of intestine. Yeah, I remember Detroit, I say. Wish I didn't.
Well, 5 years ago, that was an emergency. These days, it's the rule. The PRCs have their own militias now, and they own the ground. Most of the big cities, the cops don't even go in anymore, because the welfare rats have better hardware. All our calls are weapons-free from the start now.
You've got to be kidding.
Wish I wasn't,
she says, precisely aping the tone of my own remark.
You people up here, you're at war with the Sino-Ruskies and the Lankies. Down Earthside, we're at war with our own people, Grayson.
All the PRCs? That's what, 500 million people? Shit, Bosprov has 20 million all by itself. There's no way they can keep a lid on all of those.
We're not,
Sergeant Fallon says.
We're barely holding the line. We let them kill each other all they want. Let them run their own shows in the PRCs. We only come out of our forts to break kneecaps whenever the sewage starts spilling out into the burbs, and they torch a few middle-class citizens in their hydro cars and their air-conditioned cracker-box houses. If it's just 2 groups of welfare rats shooting it out, nobody gives a shit anymore.
And they can afford to send 2 full battalions up here to help us out?
Ha!
Sergeant Fallon smiles without humor.
And now we get to the heart of the matter.
She looks around at her troops, as if checking for consent. Nobody says anything.
We're troublemakers, Grayson. Mutineers. The 330th is a penal battalion, like I told you. So's the 309th. Your SI troopies, with their maroon beanies and the live ammo in their rifles standing around the edge of the flight deck, they're not there to teach us the ropes or boost our combat power. They're there to keep us in check, in case we get silly ideas.
It's common knowledge that the fleet is taking advantage of the peculiar nature of message distribution across interstellar distances to present a selective and sanitized version of world news. As I listen to Sergeant Fallon's narrative of the NAC's recent trouble on its own soil, I am nonetheless amazed at how thoroughly they've kept us in the dark. I remember my trip to see Mom in Boston just a few weeks ago, and the omnipresent riot cops that all seemed to be on edge constantly. They had told me just how bad things had gotten in the old neighborhood, but according to Sergeant Fallon, Boston is a calm oasis of civil tranquility compared to almost every metroplex south of the Mason-Dixon line or west of the Rockies. The colony flights have stopped entirely. The basic nutritional allowance rations are getting reduced by hundreds of calories every other month, and the pressure in the tenements has become too great without the few safety valves there used to be. Now the PRCs are lawless free-fire zones, and only the thin green line of homeworld defense troopers is keeping the place from unraveling completely. Once again, it seems that the Lankies aren't doing anything to our species that we can't do to each other all on our own.
The first mutiny wasn't even one,
Sergeant Fallon says.
It was just some company CO down in Atlanta, Macon, refused an order from the battalion CO to clean out a tenement high-rise with gunships. They didn't even get violent or anything. Company CO tells his unit to stand down, and they do. No bloodshed. Division takes the whole battalion off the line and dissolves the company. 148 discharges on the spot. All benefits and accrued paychecks forfeit.
Holy crap, I say. Kicked out the whole company?
Every last grunt, from the company commander down to the privates folding laundry back in the supply group.
What a shit move.
Now, the second mutiny. That was a real one. This time they had a captain who had taken neo-constitutional law back at Officer U, and he decides in the middle of a drop that using remote sentry cannons on unarmed civvies is illegal. So he tells his people to stand down. Only this time, Battalion sends in another company to arrest them and secure their gear, and the captain with the law degree decides that that's an illegal order, too. So they don't come quietly and start a two-company firefight in the middle of a busy PRC that's already in full riot anyway. The armed civvies jump into the fight on the side of the mutinous unit, and before you know it, there's 100 dead grunts on the ground. The battalion's standby gunship wing making bombing runs with incendiaries, and 10 square miles of Soteng Chattanooga burning. That did not look too good on the networks, I'll tell you that.
I should be astonished and angry, but I'm not really surprised, and I've long since lost the right to be outraged. 5 years ago, I held the line on the ground against people who could have been my neighbors and schoolmates had we dropped into Boston instead of Detroit. And I ended up putting a bunker buster missile into a building full of people. Part of my conscience tries to convince me to this day that there were no unarmed civvies in the high-rise by then, that anyone with half a brain would have gotten out of there when the shooting started. But my rational side knows better. I remember how we fought our way through the darkened city that night, scared shitless, standing on a carpet of discarded flechette sabots, and mentally marking everything not in TA battle armor as a kill-on-sight target. Whether we were justified or not, whether it was legal at the time or not. Morality left the equation the first time one of us pulled the trigger on a welfare citizen. If my oath of service commits me to the protection of the rights and freedoms of the Commonwealth citizens, I've violated it dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of times since I got out of boot camp. We have guys going home on leave all the time. Nobody's picked up any rumors about HD units and mutiny.
There's nobody to talk to,
Sergeant Fallon says.
Most HD units are confined to base between drops now, and when you get down there on leave, they won't let you anywhere near a hot PRC or an unstable unit. How many HD froggies did you bump into when you were last Earthside, Grayson?
None, I say. Just cops and MPs. Sergeant Fallon turns her palms up in a there-you-have-it gesture. I digest this information for a few moments. HD grunts are the main muscle on the ground. They get enough battalions just sitting down and saying no, they won't have any way to keep the welfare rats in the PRCs, unless they start giving dropships and infantry training to the city cops.
Exactly,
she says. So how did you end up on the shit list, Sarge?
Oh, hell, you know me,
she says with a smile.
I don't think it was any particular thing, really. I've been a pain in Division's ass since before you joined us. They say I have a problem with authority. I say I have a low tolerance for stupid.
What was the excuse?
Failure to comply with a direct order from a superior officer, conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. You know the mutinous company I told you about? The one that ended up shooting it out with another unit?
Yeah.
That was Bravo Company from the 300th. The 365th was the one they called up first to smoke them out. You remember your old pal Major Unworth? He was the head Indian in charge of battalion that day. I told my company commander that my platoon wouldn't shoot at fellow HD grunts, and the captain came around to my viewpoint.
She smiles again, this time with a spark of genuine joy in her eyes.
God, it was such a pleasure to tell that useless sack of shit to go fuck himself. I may have even used the all-battalion channel. Terrible abuse of non-commissioned officer in charge privileges.
Terrible. I concur, and we both grin.
He got the last laugh, of course. I spent a month in the brig after that. They didn't want to give me a proper court-martial. Didn't want the pictures of the sergeant with the Medal of Honor on her Class A standing before a tribunal. Plus, some of the NCOs from the 300th used the unlawful order defense, and the media got wind of the whole thing somehow. So they let me out of the brig a few weeks later and handed me my marching orders. Dissolved the platoon and spread us out all over the 330th. The whole battalion is nothing but obedience-challenged grunts from all over the brigade.
They're not helping us out, I conclude. They're getting rid of you. Sergeant Fallon shrugs.
That way we're not a bad influence on the units that still do as they're told.
And you don't cause the brass any sleepless nights, having to worry about a whole battalion turning on them and giving dropships to the PRC militias.
Better to just shunt us off into space, get ground up by the Lankies, or cool our jets on some deserted rock far away from Earth. You got it, Grayson.
The question is, where the hell are they sending us? Where are they going to stick two battalions of combat troops they want to keep away from the rest of the Corps?
Beats me,
Sergeant Fallon says.
All I know is that the Corps is at the end of its rope, and so's the entire Commonwealth. Things are going to come to a head pretty soon, and we're getting ringside seats to that particular show.
Overhead, the speakers of the shipboard announcement system pop to life with a brief squelch. Now hear this. Now hear this. All hands prepare for Alcubierre transition. Repeat, all hands prepare for Alcubierre transition. Infantry passengers, report to your assigned areas. Countdown 20 minutes. All the HD troopers in the room look at me, eager for some explanation of the unfamiliar protocol. We're hitting the chute for FTL travel to wherever the hell we're going.
How long is that gonna take?
Someone asks. No idea. Depends on the system. Could be 2 hours, could be 20. They never tell you the destination ahead of time. Beyond the wall of crates making up the walls of the makeshift lounge, there's the shuffling of many pairs of boots on the deck as the crew members of the Midway rush to their duty stations.
Well, you heard the brass,
Sergeant Fallon says, and stands up to collect her armor plates.
Let's go back to our little tent village and see where the rabbit hole pukes us out.
She claps me on the back as she walks by.
Good to see you again, Andrew. Maybe we'll have some more time to catch up on things before the world completely goes to shit.
I spend the last 20 minutes before our Alcubierre transition composing two last messages to Mom and Hallie. I know they'll most likely never leave the Midway's neural network databanks, but I send them anyway, just in case this is my last chance to say goodbye. I will keep my promise. See you in 6 months. I love you, Andrew. When I hit the send button on the message to my fiancé, I realize that this is the first time I've said those three words to her. Wherever we're going, I'm determined to come back from it, even if I have to shoulder aside every Lanky in the universe.